Well, you've made it to session number 4. Congratulations. What we're about to learn today is one of the most important tools in creating change in someone. We're going to talk about leverage. But first, how was your assignment? Did you find someone and elicit their model of the world? If you did, congratulations. If you didn't, you know what Tony always says, stop the audio right now and go back and do it. This program is not just about gaining knowledge, it's about doing it. Something I always tell my clients is that there's a huge difference between knowing about something and knowing how to do something. And that is what learning is about. Learning is about increasing your ability to be able to do something in a different way to lead to a different outcome. So if you know about something but nothing has changed, then you haven't learned it. Okay, if you're still with me, I'm assuming you did your assignment, so great job. Today is step number 2 of the 7 master steps, obtain leverage. Getting leverage is when you find a bargain point to make change a must, and you move a person towards a more empowering action. When you get leverage, you help a person find a strong enough reason to change immediately. If a person's got strong enough reasons to want to change, they can change anything. As Tony said earlier in the program, change is never a matter of ability, but always a matter of motivation. Everybody has a point of leverage, and it will be different depending on the person and the situation. Remember the prior session where we talked about the model of the world? Well, different models of the world and different filters of how people experience the world lead to different points of leverage. Leverage must be immediate. Immediate pain to not changing now, and immediate pleasure for changing now. It's like a curse. Once people experience the potential pleasure for changing now, they feel that there's no other way out than changing. Your job is to find that unique leverage point for a person, where the pain is immediate and severe, and the pleasure is great. That's the way you're going to serve them. The first part of today's session is about global solutions. You will learn what to do when a person is failing to change and how to look at the ways they are meeting their 6 needs as a leverage point for bringing about change. In our second session for today, Tony is going to share with you an incredibly powerful skill called framing. You will learn pre-framing, reframing, and deframing. These skills can really help you get leverage on someone. And I think you will find they're also just really great skills to use in general. So, let's begin with Tony explaining global solutions.
A global solution is when people are failing to change, when people are in pain, isn't that the number one thing that's wanting them to make a change? Yes or no? Change is the way to get out of pain primarily. The reason they don't let go of the pain is because they have some belief system that this pain at some level meets their needs. Like, well, I don't want to not being angry, because if I don't get angry, I'll keep taking advantage of, and I'll have even more uncertainty this won't work, and no one will pay attention to me, and I'll feel totally insignificant, and we'll make no progress, and I won't get any growth. It's a typical example. So they don't let go of it. The reason they don't change is because they think changing their state from pain to pleasure would take away something that's meeting their needs. What's the number one need that people meet by being in pain all the time? Connection with themselves. If I walk around, if I'm giving everybody else, and I walk around, I'm all sad inside, even if you don't notice, I might get some attention maybe if I walk around that way, maybe you'll give me some attention and some love. But I notice, I finally am giving something back to me, for God's sakes. I'm finally making me important, even if it is painful. The second thing is certainty. Because once a person does it after a while, they know that, they can go there, and it doesn't matter what happens. So in order to get people to make a shift, to get out of pain and pleasure, people only give up the pain when they find what I call a global solution. Something they value more than the pain. Something they value more than the pain. Does that make sense? When you find something you value more than the pain. So for example, I can be really, really upset about something. But for me personally, my global solution, I know. Like I've looked at the worst times of my life, the most painful thing, the thing that will always pull me out. Is if I can figure something out of that, my belief is if I can find something out of that experience, I'm not the only one who'll ever experience this pain. If I figure out what it is, I figure out how to solve it, I can share it with millions of people, I can make the whole world better. So what does it do? I value making things better for the world much more than hanging on to my pain. So I will trade that pain that fast for the opportunity to refocus, find an empowering meaning out of this that furthers my ultimate objective in life. So it's really important to know what pulls you out. Some of you will do this. Your global solution is your children. You won't do it for you, but your children is something you value even more than the pain. You know, like, God, I'm in pain, but if I let my kids see myself in pain, oh, my God, that'll make them so upset, so I can't be upset. So during that time, they won't be upset as long as their kids are around. So do they have the ability to be out of pain? You bet. But they only do it when they have a global solution, when they have something they value more than the pain that they're in. Okay? So if you're going to help somebody and you're looking for leverage, the leverage can be found in which of the needs they value most, because you can show them how they're missing out or losing or something. Like, if you say to somebody, you got to stop smoking. So I tell you what, people die of this stuff. You're going to die of cancer. Well, some significance-driven, certainty-driven achiever is going to go, George Burns smoked till he was, you know, 202 years old. Great. 99.999% of the population dies, but George Burns did it, so you're going to be one of those. Right? But that won't get them. What if you say, John, Mike Eisner was talking the other day about people smoking and stuff, and talking about how he cannot stand that. He thinks people like that are weak. And for him, it's like that. I just want to warn you. Well, fine. That person will freak out about this. It'll be in their head. They'll be going crazy. Because significance is what they value more. So that's where the wound is to move them to change. When you're dealing with some of these people, you're going to have to get them to change initially and then turn change into progress. Once you get them moving, now we can start to define what they want. So very often what I do is I start out with change. I use the environment that's stimulating it. I find the leverage. I do whatever else. But if you watch my work is not like NLP. Okay, I'm going to solve this little problem. Now you don't have the phobia anymore. Right? So you do that, but then you take that and you turn it into progress by expanding their model of the world. By instead of just adapting something or eliminating something, let's do something bigger that produces a greater result. And now I start to find out what do they want, figure out where they need to go, start to build things that will keep them consistently moving in that direction on an ongoing basis, not just when the pain is present. But if I got to make the change initially, I look for something they value more than their pain. So the most powerful example I can tell you was years ago on Date with Destiny in Hawaii, many years ago, and I was doing this therapy on somebody, and this woman, maybe you remember the story, had 52 personalities. She started splitting personalities. So I had to understand her model of the world. Like, what's making this work? So in my head, it's racing. Everything people do, they need to meet six needs. She's splitting personalities to meet which needs. Then I went through quick. I read her the questionnaire. She was locked up. First of all, she was sexually abused by her father. And then when she tried to tell somebody, he put her in a mental institution. Then in the mental institution, they drugged her every day. And the doctor who drugged her sexually abused her on a consistent basis. So I immediately go, okay, why would somebody split personalities? One, dissociation. Right, she's trying to, there's no way out of pain. You're trapped, strapped down, and being screwed over, literally. The only way to get out of pain is it's not you, it's somebody else. And then the problem with that is if you've ever done a phobia cure, some people's phobias are so intense, you have to do double dissociation. Right, because one's not enough, so you do a second one. I've had some people, I had to pull out 10 people before I could get them out. But I did it. Right, where other people gave up, they said, oh, I tried that phobia thing, it didn't work. I said, well, you didn't do it intensely enough. You didn't have enough of the outcome clear and keep changing your behavior. You just did the same thing. So the bottom line is, I look at this and I go, okay, now why else would you do it? What other need would you meet? First, certainty that you can get out of pain. What's certainty? Certainty you can be comfortable. You can be out of pain. It's a base need. What else would you get? Variety. You're sitting in bed all day long with nothing to do, drugged out. You need some entertainment, so you create movies. And the best movies are the ones where you forget you're in a movie theater. You think you're actually it, aren't they? So I'm going, she's getting variety from this. What else you get? Significance. She went on this big deal about she was the first, one of the first 10 MPDs, multiple personality disorders, in the whole country. All right, she goes through this whole thing here. What else you get? Connection, because people pay attention to her, right? Significance on a major scale. She'd walk into a doctor's office. She goes, she's not going to that office, and I'd say, doctor, I'm going to pee on your couch. Right? So she had that. What else would she get? She had a sense of growth and contribution. They were studying her all the time. All her needs are being met by being this way. So the only way to get her out is I've got to find something she values more. You guys follow me? I got to increase pain, link pain to this behavior, and find something she values more so there's something to go after. So I could start to make some what? What's this called? Make some progress. You see the difference? If you just try to change them through pain alone, it won't last unless you can find a new target for them to go after. So when she started splitting personalities and going nuts in the room, and people were freaking out. She's like, doing all this stuff. It was bizarre, right? And I just slowly stayed centered. What is that? Staying totally balanced, and they go together. What? Certain. When you go in a certain state, you get balanced, don't you? So I was totally certain, so I just sat to her, let her talk, and I said, listen, I know you believe all these personalities, and I think they're very colorful. But I said, I know you are Mary, whatever her name was, right? And I said, I just want to know. I want to compliment you. I know all about your history. I said, you are an amazing woman. This adaptive behavior, isn't that what that was? Right? She kept changing to figure out how in the short term to get what she wanted. But she created a system that in the long term was destroying her life. It's the same thing, right? Because she hasn't changed the full system. She just adapted little pieces of it. So I said, you created a system that's brilliant. I mean, what you've been through, being sexually abused, being tied down, I mean, look what you got. And I started saying, you were able to survive that. Most human beings never survive that. Now, what am I meaning? What need am I meaning by saying this? Great. Which, by the way, I noticed earlier, the MPD thing, everything else, like she wanted attention, she wanted significance above all else. Right? Apparently. Apparently, it's significance. But I know inherently, it's really love, because that's what it's for everybody. Okay? Because those are two primary fears. And they do go together. So I said, amazing, you're able to do this. I mean, brilliant. And I said, you're able to entertain yourself. And I started going through all the ways she's meeting your needs and everything else. And she's like, continue the behavior, because why change? All I'm doing is reinforcing that what she's done is so brilliant, right? So she's da, da, da. And I said, but there's one problem. I said, you're here for a reason. And the reason is you're in pain. You know, it's quiet. Well, what am I doing? I'm starting over here. I'm going to hammer this out of her. Because if I just say, let's make some progress. Let's build the life you really want. Let's create all these wonderful little things, white people. That's not going to work. Because when people are in that place, they have no certainty anything like that's possible. That's not even the frame of reference they are. I got to start with some hammers. I got to drill into her soul and move her. Once she's moving, I can get momentum towards progress. So I say to her, I say, okay. I said, but you're in pain. I pause, right? And she says, now what happens? What happens when I say that? I'm intense in my voice like that. There's a reason you're here. Because you're in pain. I'm quiet. Now what immediately? Tell me what happens. If I said that to you, what would happen? You'd search for what? You'd search for your pain. Somebody else, what would you do? A matcher would search for the pain. What would a mismatcher do? No way on me pain. But no matter who it is, once I keep introducing it, you will begin to have to answer my what? Question. So I said, what are you in pain about? I said, don't tell me. What does that do? She mismatches, right? Because I see she's a mismatcher. So she immediately wants to tell me. It's also a significant thing. You tell somebody who's significance-driven not to do something, screw you, I'm doing it. Mismatchers are significance-driven, in case you haven't figured it out. They're significance-driven. That's what they're doing. Or they're certainty-driven, but they usually are one of the two, and they're usually tied together. Sometimes significant certainty, sometimes certainty significance. When you think of the six needs as the top two. So I know that's what it is, so I say, so what are you really in pain about? Don't tell me. Right? So what's this doing? Just screwing with her fiercely, right? I said, I'll tell you. I said, yes, it's true you got this. Yes, it's true this. Yes, you got this. Yes, you got this. But here's the real problem. No one can love you. Because they're scared of you. Because they don't know who you are. One moment you're this, next moment you're that. They're scared. They can't take care of it. They can't do this stuff. So what you really have done is created such uncertainty in the people around you that they don't even know how they can love you. So they may give you sympathy. They may even give you attention. But it's not love and you know it. And there is a difference. She started crying. Boom. So now I've got the opening. So I started saying to her, I said, you know, you change these personalities. I walked through all these different details. I won't give you the whole story. But one thing I said is, do you like children? She said, yes. I said, you know why? Children have all kinds of identities. They're not locked into one identity. I'm Superman. Somebody goes, no, you're not. Show me the yes. Doesn't have a kid. They go, yeah, I'm Batman. I'm Superman. Oh, I'm Superman. I said, you belong with children. They're still fully alive and they're able to create anything. I said, have you ever, you know, written any stories? She said, no. I said, sure you have. Millions of them. I said, you're unbelievably creative. I said, do you love children? Yeah, I love children. Why? Children represent no threat to her sense of certainty or her what? Significance. Right? People like are all emotional about animals and children because that's who they see themselves as. They see themselves as totally vulnerable and those are the only people they can be around or things they can be around they don't feel hurt by. Because it doesn't threaten their needs. So I said, you know, maybe what you got to do is write children's books. And she's like, and so now I'm starting to create what? The potential of real what? Progress. But I also know that she's got so much hammered in here, I got to break this pattern. So, and I got to find something she values more than the pain. And what is the pain giving her primarily above all else? It's really not giving her love. And I said, it doesn't even give you certainty anymore, because now you can't remember where you left your keys. You're not sure this. And it's a lot of work to manage all this. I said, isn't it? She said, well, yeah, it is. I said, so it makes you uncertain, not just the people around you. It makes you uncertain. It's not something that connects and loves you. You're not really growing anymore by having other people analyze you. That was over a long time ago. Except I could see her start to go, but I'm one of the first MPDs. I said, yeah, and how many are there now? I said, I'm a dozen. But I was one of the first ones. I said, now that there's so many of them, that's like saying I was in the first dysfunctional family. Who remembers that person? I said, here's the truth. You think you're significant? I don't know. I said, there's plenty of MPDs, but I said, you know, and Diane Sawyer was there with whatever that show was that they were doing at the time. What was it called? Primetime Live, right? Big show, national television. She's filming, which I was freaking when this started. This is a good example of change I turned into progress. Because this woman started splitting. I had her there to cover this CEO because I wanted to show who our market is. It's not just people that are broken and like that. Hey, camera goes right there. Right? So now I got to find a way to what that, use that to achieve my outcomes. Do you follow me on this? Which I did. It ended up being one of the most powerful things that could have happened because they followed up with this woman and she never went back. They didn't do the show until a year after that date with Destiny and followed up with her psychiatrist and she never split again. The psychiatrist going, I don't know, I can't explain it, right? Gave me total credibility, more than anyway if they'd sat down there and looked at him. So change isn't a bad thing as long as you use it and turn it into progress. It's your job to turn change into progress. That's what a leader does. A leader not only makes progress, because whatever it is you set up as your objective, the minute you set that as your objective, there's going to be all kinds of changes that are going to occur to keep you from making that progress. And your job is to take those changes and convert those, utilize those. Utilization is the single most important skill of any leader, other than rapport. Right? You've got to be able to utilize whatever happens and move it towards your objective. My objective is make this one better, make the environment better, make it my larger objective, make the world better, and this camera is one of the ways to do that. So I turned to this woman, the camera's rolling, right? And she realized the camera's rolling. I said, you know what? MPDs are a dime a dozen, but you know something? They all claim they can't change. I said, and you know what? Isn't it pathetic that people can't change who really are in charge? I said, you know what's really amazing? I don't think there's ever been one that could do it in less than 60 seconds on national television. I said, are you that significant? And she saw her like, I said, probably not. Bring the camera over here. And she's like, well, no. And all I did was keep reinforcing her along the way until I got something she valued more. She valued significance, but significance that would also bring her not only significance, but love and contribution and certainty to her life and a new kind of variety. Because this is a 50 person. I was real boring at this point. And she shifted. And she never went back. And all I did was condition her with a new identity. When she started to go back to the old triad, because all that was a triad, a series of them, right? You know what I'm talking about here? There was a specific set of what she was using. 52 of them. She had 52 triads, literally. Now, you probably have a lot of them, too, but hers were distinct with identities attached to them. So each of these triads, or primary triads, constellations of triads, honestly, because each of those personalities had a series of states within them. Each of these constellations, these triads, they all had a name. So all I did was keep breaking the association from that's her to that's a pattern. And whenever, I'd always reinforce her, Beverly, whatever, I can't remember her name, Beverly, whatever it was, and I'd reinforce her, and give her so much attention, so much love, so much acknowledgement for the change, that was conditioned.